Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is side two of For the Record program number 387, The Financial War on Terror. This is being recorded on November 17th of 2002. Once again, it is my pleasure and privilege to be joined by Lucy Commissar, who has written for, among other publications, Salon.com, In These Times. She's also written for the Pacific News Service, Earth Times, and has worked with MSNBC. Lucy, welcome back once again to our airwaves. Now, in the first side of our program near the end, we were talking about the Banca del Gottardo and its relationship both with the Banco Ambrosiano and with the Clearstream network. Let's sort of wade back in here with a brief review of that discussion by way of providing a transition to some of the other points we want to cover here.
If anybody has seen Godfather Part 3, they know the Banco Ambrosiano story, even though they don't know that they know it, because that's the subplot in the movie. Banco Ambrosiano, known as the Vatican Bank, was run by Roberto Calvi, who was very close to the Vatican. One believes that a lot of the money in it was Vatican money, also the managed money that the Vatican controlled around the world. But he made a lot of very bad investments using the offshore system, using the money from the bank to launder through offshore so he could buy parts of the bank back with his own money. At a certain point, the Banco del Gottardo in Switzerland, based in Lugano, was the Swiss subsidiary of the Banco Ambrosiano, which collapsed in the early 1980s, around 1980. So then Banco del Gottardo became independent. And it has been involved in a number of very problematic cases. And the Altaqua case is the one that got the most publicity, but it certainly is not the only one that it's been involved in. It was discovered that the correspondent accounts of the Altaqua Bank were held in Banco del Gottardo. To give another definition, a correspondent account is an account that a bank has in another bank. If a bank wants to do business in a country where it doesn't exist, it can have a bank account in another bank. So it can send money through its account in the other bank and then deal with movements of money in that country. Banco del Gottardo never really had a brick-and-mortar place. It was all run through correspondent accounts, and the correspondent accounts both in Switzerland and also in the Bahamas were run by the Banco del Gottardo.
We were speaking about Banco del Gottardo and Altaqua, and I'd like to mention a couple of names that figure in conjunction with both institutions. First of all, Pier Felice Barchi, am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah.
And Claudio Generali, if you could tell us about both men, who they are, and how they relate to both banks, both Gottardo and Altaqua.
Well, Generali is the president of the bank, of the Banca del Gottardo, and Pier Felice Barchi has been the personal lawyer of Youssef Mustafa Nada, who is the man who set up the Altaqua Bank, and both Generali and Pier Felice Barchi are colleagues and leaders of one of the political parties in Switzerland, which is in control of the region of Ticino or Tessin, which is notorious as a money laundering, a drug money laundering area. There are lots of links and connections that people have. And the politics of it is very important because they are protected by people in political power in Switzerland and particularly in Ticino.
In connection with Altaqua, before we get into Altaqua per se and some of the individuals that have been involved with that milieu, and Altaqua is really more of a network perhaps than a bank. It's a very, very complicated state of affairs. But some of the people that network with people like Claudio Generali and Pier Felice Barchi, tell us about Carlo Del Ponte.
Carlo Del Ponte, as a young lawyer, got a job in the law firm run by Pier Felice Barchi. And there had been investigations into Altaqua beginning in the mid-1990s. This is not a new case. The DIGOS, which is the acronym for the Italian Anti-Terrorist Agency, the Division of General Intelligence and Special Operations, they were very concerned about radical Islamic activity in Italy, particularly going on in Milan, where they found links to the Al-Taqwa Bank. And they tried to get cooperation from Carla Del Ponte, who was then the Attorney General of Switzerland, and she refused. She declined because this was pointing back to the Banca del Gottardo, which is in Ticino. She had previously been the prosecutor in Ticino, and then through her political connections got moved up to be the federal prosecutor, the Attorney General. So the Italians were blocked from getting the kind of information they needed by prosecutor Carla Del Ponte. Now, there's something very interesting if you want to take it a little further. Carla Del Ponte is now the chief prosecutor in The Hague on the trial of Slobodan Milosevic. I read an article not too long ago in Corriere della Sera, which is a centrist daily in Milan, and the writer denounced Carla Del Ponte because in the efforts to follow the money trails of Milosevic, which were through the offshore system, of course, she refused to move into Switzerland and to try to get information from Switzerland. She just ignored the Swiss banks because it was leading right back to Ticino.
And some of the same conduits that also, ironically enough, would be implicated in the background of some of the Balkan Muslim fundamentalist activity.
Yes, yeah, because in that area, one of this, by the way, also leads to the Russians. Begjet Pakoli, an Albanian, who has been linked to groups supporting radical Islamists, is the owner of Mabitex. That's the construction company, which you may remember was accused of laundering $65 million in bribes and kickbacks, money which it got for working on refurbishing construction projects inside the Kremlin. Some of the money was kicked back to Yeltsin through credit cards. Other money was just paid out. And this is the reason why a man named Pavel Borodin was for a while in jail in New York City. He had come to go to the inauguration of Bush, and he got clapped in jail in New York on a warrant based on the fact that some Swiss judges were investigating him for this money laundering case. So the spider web of connections is quite fascinating, and a lot of it seems to end up in Ticino. Mr. Pakoli has the mayor of Ticino on one of his boards, for example.
Now, speaking again of Begjet Pakoli,
I'm sorry, let me correct that. The mayor of Lugano. Ticino is the department, and Lugano is the city.
Now Lugano, of course, is the epicenter for both Banco del Gottardo and Al-Taqwa. And
yes.
I believe it, on the other side of the lake from that, it was at Campione d'Italia, which is another very interesting sort of money-moving place.
That's a little enclave, which is officially Italy, except it uses the same phone code as Lugano, and people go there for tax purposes because they can they have some advantages by being there and not in Switzerland in terms of Swiss taxes, and it is really it's actually a very gorgeous place, and it's where Mr. Nada has his villa. I visited him there. The top of a hill overlooking the lake, some of the other people that were connected to the bank were also there in Campione d'Italia.
We're going to, using a travelogue metaphor, we're going to come back to Lugano and Youssef Nada and some of the other vistas upon which he looks out. Ended a sentence with a preposition, but what the heck. Back to Pakoli. He was connected with something called the Bosnian Institute, which in turn, through Banco del Gottardo, has links to not only Islamic fundamentalists active in the Balkans, but also to an alleged former Soviet and Russian biological warfare front. I wonder if you could describe Biopreparat Interplastica, Begjet Pakoli, and some of the conduits running through
Gottardo. I came across some interesting documents, and it showed that, first of all, Biopreparat is the was the Soviet company that produced and stockpiled biological weapons, anthrax, plague, smallpox. And I showed some documents that showed the Banco del Gotardo involved in deals between Biopreparat and Interplastica, which is a company that the same Begjet Pecoli was running. It had started in the 60s, and it specialized in trade with countries of the Eastern Bloc to get around the Western embargo. And it continued, and it seemed that it was working to do a deal in biological weapons. And the paperwork showed Banco del Gotardo. That's a little scary. I have memos between the bank and their law firm, which show that they're talking, and they're written in code. And one of them is saying, "For our friends of Tarola," and that was an offshore company, a shell company. Because, by the way, it's not only bank accounts, but also companies that use the offshore system. When you hear something called a shell company, what it means is it's registered someplace where you don't have to say who the owner is. So it's just used to cover up any kind of dirty deal you want, from laundering drug money to selling armaments. But this document, this fax, said that they were depositing through Interplastica two containers of 20 kilograms of material in the security box in the bank. This was signed by a man named Pata Mamaladze. He is a Georgian arms trafficker, and interestingly enough, has been involved in another interesting operation. He's the man who worked out, together with the help of the Russian Prime Minister Mikhail Kasyanov, a deal in which a company he ran called Falcon was given the right to buy Russia's $2.5 billion debt to Czechoslovakia for only 23% of its value. So that meant that the Czechs were only going to get 23% of $2.5 billion, and we might think that Mr. Mamaladze and his company might get a bit more than 23% because he did it in cooperation with Kasyanov. Now, Kasyanov is called by many Russians Misha 2% because he supposedly collects a 2% illegal commission on a lot of deals. So 2% on $2.5 billion is very healthy.
Yes, indeed. Very, very healthy indeed.
But you see how all the connections. Here we go back to Russia. Begjet Pakoli with the Mabotek scandal, involved with a deal through Interplastica to buy something from a company who is in the production of biological weapons, and the deal is going through a guy named Mamaladze, who is in another deal which has been brought to fruition with the help of the Russian Prime Minister. So we come around full circle.
And obviously with many of these institutions overlapping the milieu of Al-Qaeda, the whole issue of a biological warfare research program in the former Soviet Union, or perhaps now in Russia as well, is not at all tangential, or peripheral, I should say. Back to Al-Taqwa and its associations with Banco del Gotardo. You mentioned Per Felice Barchi, and he's the attorney for Youssef Nada. Tell us a little bit about Youssef Nada and Bank Al-Taqwa and its connections running to the Bahamas and elsewhere.
Well, it had been set up early on, actually by his father, because for radical organizations, the Muslim Brotherhood, really out of Egypt, needed a place in Europe to move their money, and initially that was also money used for groups like the PLO, Hamas, whatever organizations were operating, but particularly the Muslim Brotherhood. And they set up a system of secret bank accounts, initially with the help of Liechtenstein, which is Liechtenstein is such a dirty place that even the finance minister, Hans Eichel, the finance minister of Germany, a year or so ago, called Liechtenstein the worm in the European fruit. So a man who's supposed to be diplomatic because he's the finance minister, he says that. You can imagine how dirty Liechtenstein is. Well, Liechtenstein helped set up some of these operations. One of the people that got involved at a certain point was Alfred Huber, a German who is a sympathizer of the Islamic militants, also an admirer of Hitler. I met Mr. Huber, who lives near Bern in Switzerland, and he regaled me for quite a few hours about Hitler and the people who were the, I guess, the progeny, the intellectual progeny of Hitler. And he went on the board, partly, he says, because they needed a Swiss to be on the board. He continues to be an intermediary for many of these groups. And the bank so the bank is not a new thing. It didn't just start with Al-Qaeda. It existed before, and Mr. Nader took it over from his father and based it partly in Switzerland. They also had an operation in the Bahamas, and they had some companies also in Liechtenstein. It's interesting that in the Bahamas, the man who handled their they needed an address, and one of the people who set up their shell company operation is a lawyer who had been a top government official in the Bahamas until it was revealed that he was involved in protecting drug traffickers. So he had to get out of the official business of protecting drug traffickers and went into the unofficial business of protecting Al-Taqwa, and we don't know who his other clients are.
What was that gentleman's name?
Hannah.
H-A-N-N-A?
Yeah.
Okay. By the way, I just wanted to mention in passing, Lucy, the book Dollars for Terror by Richard Labeyrière, which actually was published in French in 1999 and in English in 2000, will go into some of these connections, in particular Al-Taqwa, Ahmed Huber, Youssef Nader, and some of the Nazi tangents that you mentioned in passing in connection with Huber. You have endorsed that book, have you not? Do you think that's a good source for people?
Yeah, I think it's the best book on the subject. It is the best book on the subject, because the other things that have been, the normal press in this country is very, let's say lax, and you don't really get into the background of how these things have happened. He does a very good job dealing with the Saudis, for example, dealing with the money connections to American oil. I think it's a very important book.
And that again, Dollars for Terror by Richard Labeyrière, soft cover edition, Algora Press, and copyright 2000. We've talked about that on the program before. Back to some of the Saudi connections and some of the people who've figured as directors in or shareholders in the Bank of Terror, as you titled your March 15th Salon.com article. Who are some of the names who were shareholders in Al-Taqwa?
There were about 14 pages, and then some duplicates. Altogether, 18-page register. There were three different kinds of shareholders, and one page of one and three of another and 14 of another. And they included people like Yusuf Abdullah al-Qaradawi, if I can say it right, Qaradawi, the Grand Mufti of the United Arab Emirates, five members of his family, Mariam al-Sheikh, bin Aziz al-Mubarak of a branch of the Kuwaiti royal family, members of the Khalifa family of the United Arab Emirates, who are very prominent, two sisters of the bin Ladens, Huta and Iman bin Laden, who live in Saudi Arabia, and Hassan al-Banna, a leader of the Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood group. So these were very important key people who may have moved their own money through Al-Taqwa, but also may have moved other people's money through Al-Taqwa, and it shows that this is not some marginal organization existing in the Arab world, that it was very important and very central. And as we said earlier, the Mahfouz connection, that they are a major banking family in Saudi Arabia, shows how central these operations are to the power structures in the Middle East, and particularly in Saudi Arabia and in United Arab Emirates.
One of the accounts that has a correspondent and a Clearstream correspondent account, if I'm correct, with Altaco is Citibank. Could you tell us more about that?
Well, I think that Citibank was willing to give correspondent accounts to pretty much anybody. After all, the Citibank is the bank that helped Raul Salinas set up his money laundering operation. That is the brother of the ex-Mexican president who laundered over $100 million through a system which they deliberately set up so that he could launder the money. So I'm not surprised that they would have chosen Citibank for their correspondent account, knowing how lax Citibank has proven to be.
One of the investigations, I should say, that overlaps the milieu of Altaqua and many of the things that we've spoken about, that is the series of fronts, and this overlaps Khalid bin Mahfouz and others. But could you tell us about Operation Green Quest and the raids of March 20th? I don't believe that this actually figured in some of the articles that I've already touched on, but it's inextricably linked with what you've written about in
research. Well, this is the operation by the U.S. government bringing together the various law enforcement agencies, whether it be the IRS, Customs, Justice Department, FBI, to work together on tracing the financial flows of Al-Qaeda. They are the people who are supposed to be going after the dirty money.
And Green Quest
means the dollar quest.
Indeed. Ironically enough, it's also the sacred color of Islam.
Yes, that's true.
they probably didn't mean that, but the interesting thing about this operations, it has cut across some of the charitable fronts or charity organizations that have been alleged to have been Al Qaeda fronts, and also overlaps many of the people hooked up with Youssef Nader. And it'll be interesting to see where that particular investigation goes. Lucy, going back to Altaqua and its milieu, Ahmed Huber, whom you alluded to and with whom you spoke in did you interview him in Germany?
Yeah, no, he lives in Bern, near Bern, a suburb of Bern. He's Swiss-German. He's Swiss.
An article in MS that was featured in MSNBC this past September 16th, you referred to a fellow, I think it was Hassan Wadani. I'm not sure of the gentleman's first name, but he made some interesting allegations about Russian arms that were being trafficked to Al-Qaeda, and he brought up the name of Ahmed Huber. I wonder if I could ask you to sum that up for us.
He said that he had been involved in a group, and he said he'd been involved only because he wanted to get phony papers so he could bring his family to Italy from where they were living in Tunisia. But he said he learned that there was an operation where some people from the Balkans wanted to bring in weapons from Russia, and they needed some help. Well, Switzerland, of course, was a central place for the money movements of arms, and they could go through Europe and Central Asia, but then they needed to bring arms to the Bosnians, and Bosnia, of course, is just on the other side of Italy, over the water. And Huber was the man who helped set up the operation, and he put people together because he would know who would work on it. In the end, they would bring the arms by train to Switzerland. They said they were machine parts for humanitarian aid, and they were the aid was being administered by the Mother Teresa of Calcutta Center of Lucerne. Lucerne is, of course, in Switzerland, and they took the name Mother Teresa of Calcutta because they thought nobody would be suspicious of anything named after Mother Teresa of Calcutta, which is pretty funny since this is a Muslim organization, but it didn't seem to set off any suspicions. The center was controlled by Albanians, and they moved the war material and they laundered the money. The parts would go to Italy and then across the water across the sea to former Yugoslavia. But Huber, according to Wadani, is the man who helped put the right people together to do the operation. He denied it. I called him and asked him if he indeed had done this, and he said he hadn't done this.
Wadani's name was recently placed, was it not, on the list of people whose assets were to be frozen?
The U.S. At various times, the Office of Foreign Assets Control under the Treasury Department adds names every once in a while to the people whose assets around the world have to be frozen, and Mr. Wadani was a few months ago put on that list.
A bunch of associates of Youssef Nada were originally placed on it, including Ahmed Huber, by the way, originally I think it was November of 2001, and then this past fall, the list was expanded, was it not?
Yeah, they did a raid in November on Nada's house in Campione d'Italia and on all the Al-Taqwa locations. And they have little by little gotten the pieces of the network, which connect to some of the names that we talked about, to the Banca del Gottardo and some of these other operations. But it's a pretty long list now. And I mean, the problem, though, of course, is that once it's like grabbing onto a balloon. Once you grab it in one place, it just pops up someplace else. And I was astonished when I heard the Treasury Department press conference the other day. Mr. Goulet, who is in charge of running after the dirty money, he said very proudly that $112 million had been frozen. That's nothing. $112 million? That's nothing. And if that's all they've gotten after all this time, we are in big trouble because they haven't gotten the money. And the problem, of course, is that they refuse to go after the system. You can't just say I'm going after terrorist money, because if a bank account has secret accounts and the companies are secret companies, you don't know who owns that account or who owns that company. They can make the account look like it belongs to Joe Blow. And the company can, you just pick the name of the company. Well, Mother Calcutta, how about that? Or you pick the name of any company. And then you have a phony invoice that suggests that this company has bought this service and therefore has to pay this money out. And how do you know that there's not a real company? And how do you know that there's not a real service? This is the way Russia was looted. It was phony companies and phony services, and you had to pay money out to some account in Grand Cayman or Jersey or the Isle of Man because it was to go to a company that had provided a service in Russia, but of course, or to a Russian company. Well, it never had provided anything. They were just looting. Well, this is the way Al-Qaeda can move its money. The real problem, which the administration will not deal with, is the whole system. It's the bank and corporate secrecy system. As long as you allow shell companies that are allowed to exist without real names, and as long as you allow bank accounts, well, they're going to have, maybe next year, they will have another proud announcement saying they have found another $100 million, whereas we know that they've got to speak in much, much bigger sums, many more zeros than that.
Lucy, you've done a very good job of illustrating how the financial war on terror is, in fact, part of a much, much larger question that an awful lot of powerful people do not seem inclined to deal with for reasons I think you've made obvious. We have been speaking with Lucy Commissar, the author of a number of articles for In These Times and Salon.com. There will be a detailed annotated description of For the Record number 387 in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at spitfirelist.com, and there are links between the Spitfire website and two websites maintained by sister station WFMU-FM, which are archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio. WFMU.org/Dave Emery has more recent programs streaming. Longer shows are available for download only on a longer URL. We've been visiting with Lucy Commissar in For the Record 387. Lucy, I want to thank you for sharing your time with us.
You are very welcome. It was my pleasure.
That concludes For the Record number 387, Side 2, The Financial War on Terror, being recorded on November 17th of 2002. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.